This interview was conducted on the 16th of June 1984 with a Mrs. Esling. My name is Christine Herzog, and my aim was to find out some more detailed information about the Narrewarra North Primary School in its early years, from when it began in 1877. However, Mrs. Esling worked as a teacher in different areas within Melbourne before she actually came to live in Narrewarra North. Even then, Mrs. Esling was transferred to Berwick for quite a time. Narrewarra North was a school that Mrs. Esling always wanted to work at because she had done some relief teaching there and loved it. She loved the children and the community. The Berwick children were far more trying and not at all as obedient as the Narrewarra North children. When a vacancy finally arrived at the Narrewarra North Primary and Mrs. Esling was accepted in 1949-1950, the beginning of 25 years of teaching in this primary school began. It is surprising to note that Mrs. Esling's husband and his sister attended Narrewarra North Primary School in the early 1900s. In fact, Mr. Esling and his sister appear in the early attendance rolls of the school. Mrs. Esling's sister-in-law was one of the first sewing mistresses in 1927 to 1932. The Eslings appear in the attendance rolls as far back as 1909, and their land ownership was large. They played a large part within the Narrewarra North community. The early part of this interview was wiped off because of tape entanglement, but as the answers were recorded on paper as well, I will document the beginning. My first question was, what other functions was the primary school used for? Mrs. Esling answered that there were no real dual functions of the building in her time of teaching, other than small cake stalls and Mothers' Club meetings. The Mothers' Club, it seems, played a large role in the Narrewarra North Primary School. The amounts of money they raised from their various raffles and cake stalls made it so much easier to buy certain literature and textbooks. The second question I asked was what sort of facilities the primary school had. Mrs. Esling answered that there was tank water, which was quite convenient. However, the two-roomed primary school had no staff room for quite a few years up until the early 1960s. There were no little luxuries like a toilet for teacher use, and Mrs. Esling had to use the children's toilet. In 1947, the installation of two lights and two power points at the cost of £10 took place. This was when electricity finally found its way to the little township of Narrewarra North. The local tennis court was also built in this time on school property. In 1948, a telephone was installed, and a year later, the first playground equipment was erected. Mrs. Esling remembers when the bicycle shed was built in 1951 at the cost of £75. Also in this year, one of the two classrooms gained blackout blinds for the screening of films. In 1963, an extra classroom, 24 feet by 24 feet, an office, 16 feet by 12 feet, and a storeroom, 8 feet by 8 feet, were erected to house a growing student population. In 1972, the older part of the school building, where the first head teachers and their families had lived while the head teacher taught at the primary school, was condemned, as it was weather-worn and near falling down. However, it still stood when Mrs. Esling retired. It was then used as a storeroom, office, cookery, parents' meeting room, and a dark room. In 1984, though, it was unhappily gone, but remembered. The third question I asked Mrs. Esling was if she could remember any particularly bright students that attended, as well as the types of students that attended. Mrs. Esling replied that the only one name that came to mind of a very bright young girl, however, I can't remember that name. Other than that, Mrs. Esling was always impressed by the children's manners, neatness, and willingness. She loved the children and loved teaching them more than any other children she'd ever taught. They were all quite bright. The children's parents were mainly farmers, labourers, or orchidists, and the areas they came from was Narrewarra North and a few from Hallam. My last question was answered on the tape, you'll hear it, and that was, what sort of transport did they use to get to school? For the rest of the interview, please forward this tape. Mrs. Asling, what type of transport did they use? Did they use ponies and bikes? And where did they put their bikes?
They put their bikes there, and some came on ponies and put their ponies. We used to call what is now where the multi-purpose room was the pony paddock. They tied their ponies up there and they used to ride them. A lot of them walked a long way.
What distance?
Up to 5 miles. Mm. Some of them walked.
They'd be fit.
Mm.
How are the age groups and classrooms set out? The different classes?
Well, when I first went there, there was only the two rooms, and they were divided into prep 1, 2, and 3, and I had those, and then the bigger ones, the 4, 5, and 6, were in the other room.
Oh, so there was no really individual, they just all got the same.
No, that was when the rooms were added and we got more teachers. When the attendance, the number of pupils grew, you got an extra teacher for so many pupils, more pupils. Depend on the number that you had on the roll, how many teachers you got. And the bigger the number on the roll, the more teachers you got.
Oh, I see. And what sort of education did they get, the different age groups? Was it the same as now, like, you know, with the readers and the maths, history?
Yes, the same really as it is now. I suppose you'd say the brilliant ones had to halt a little while the slow ones caught up. There was no one like doing, say, a couple of years advanced maths or English, like they'd be still kept in the class according to their age, they were kept in the grades. Mm-hmm. They were graded according to age, a little different from what it is now. Doesn't matter if they're young and they're brilliant, they go on into a higher grade now. Well, they weren't when I was teaching. They were just graded according to their age. If you were 5 and a half when you started, you went into prep.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you would spent a year in prep, you went into grade 1. And you went on from there.
What was the teacher's role, the actual role of the teacher? What was your duty?
I say it was everything. It was teacher, mother, nurse, and I suppose you could say peacemaker in the school ground. Well, the whole welfare of the child depended on the teacher.
Did you also take on the role of social worker?
No, not really. No, I don't know. I wouldn't say you did that. Mm-hmm. You might have listened to home troubles and kind of smoothed them out for them. I used to, but I don't know whether every teacher would. It would be because I knew the families, I think, that I'd try and help out with anything problem was causing a child probably to be sorrow, you know, any child that was dissatisfied when he came to school, you'd kind of probe into it. And I suppose that was as far as the social aspect then.
Also, I suppose because there were smaller classes, you'd become more personal.
You became so personal, they thought you were almost there in their family. Mm-hmm. You belonged to them. That's what they thought.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Yes. You kind of advised them and sympathised with them. Just pass it off lightly, all their little troubles you listen to. That would be because it was small and you knew the families. Mm-hmm. I think it makes a difference to if you're single when you're teaching or you're married. I think a married woman has more understanding.
Compassion.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember any times when there was any outbreak of disease or any unusual events during your stay?
No, I don't think there was anything ever, any serious things there. Not like in the towns, you know. I was there when the poliomyelitis broke out in South Melbourne. That was a dreadful thing. But here there was just the common complaints. Measles, perhaps, and whooping cough.
Bats spotted there?
Yes.
Any head lice?
That was very unusual here.
Mm.
Yeah. Because most of them had shorter hair.
Did they wear any uniforms?
Or no, not in the early stages. The uniforms came in later. The Mother's Club made the little frocks and they wore the blue and white check frocks. Mm-hmm. Girls, boys had a tie and a coloured band on their jumpers. But that was more recently.
Mm.
It was just a long time after I went back. No, never looked for anything special in the way of clothes. They were always dressed well, as you'd find out in here in the reports. The first one was 1959. Pupils are neatly dressed and well behaved. That was typical of the school.
With your experiences from Berwick and Narrewarren North, was there any great differences other than the numbers?
Oh yes, there was differences. There was more trouble in the bigger school,
mm-hmm.
in Berwick School.
Mm-hmm.
They were very mixed, very nice class, and then this very hard to manage type. Oh yes, it was a lot of difference. And by what I heard when I was there, there was a lot of difference between the Narrewarren and the Narrewarren North children.
Oh, what kind of difference?
Yes. I think probably in Narrewarren North, owing to them having big holdings and farms, they had their own fun in their own homes. Down at Narrewarren, be small holdings probably, and I suppose they got away a little bit from home life down there.
I've got a book here on corporal punishment. It goes back, and I see that it's been taken, hasn't continued from 1960 onwards. What other punishments did you have, and for what sort of offences?
I think the upper school might have been chastised by keeping them in or giving them words to write.
Much like today.
Yes, just the same. The younger ones, I don't ever remember keeping children in or giving them any punishment at all.
While you were there, what sort of playground facilities did they have? How did they amuse themselves during lunch times and recesses?
Oh, they had balls and cricket bats, and there was always the oval near the school that made it easy, because the bigger ones could go over there and play cricket or kick a football while the little ones played. Their playground was always supervised, even when there were two of us there. We took it in turns always to go out and look round and see that they were all happy and playing. The Mother's Club was the great help there. They were wonderful. You see, it wasn't long before they had were allowed to go on the tennis courts too. See, there were tennis courts near the school. And I think they got hold of rackets and balls and played there. They were always very keen. They were always very sporty too. They loved it. They loved playing competitive games. No, there was never any shortage of money. At first, the Mothers Club used to have the little raffles and the usual things that Mothers Club have. And the secretary of the Mothers Club, as it be, used to come in with £1. And she used to give me £1 from the Mothers Club. And I always bought books, you know, books of poems or stories. Or when I left there, years after, though, there were still some of them there, very old-fashioned ones, but I guess they have been worn out or destroyed or thrown out by now. But
shame.
They were very good and always asked, "Do you want anything?" for the school, that was. But that pound was spent on, mainly it was spent on books.
Did they
build up a library?
Did they get their funds by selling cakes, cake stalls and things
like
that?
Yes, they never had a stall though. They had mainly raffles, and they might play, I didn't get any money if they played euchre. I suppose they raffled a cake occasionally and paid